Make it plain.
M.I.P.
With Masamela Matfumo.
Mark Thompson.
Make it plain.
Get woke.
Joining us now, ladies and gentlemen, it's an honor to have with us the majority whip of the United States House of Representatives. Joining us from South Carolina, the gentleman from South Carolina, Congressman James Clyburn. Sir, good morning to you. How are you, and how are you holding up, man?
Well, I'm doing good. Thank you so much for asking. Things going pretty good here. South Carolina is as anxious as the other states, and I'm as anxious as other Americans as to what we're going through now. These are the kinds of things we spend a lot of time reading about, studying about, reflecting upon, but very few of us have seen anything like this, if anybody. I suspect the last time the country has been in a place like this is probably the Great Depression. Now, I do remember getting over some of that. A lot of people are amazed these days when I tell them, I remember as a child, I was born, of course, in 1940, which means this is my 80th year come July 21st. But I remember those little red ration stamps that my moms were sending us to the store with back in the early 40s, coming out of World War II. And, of course, that had to do with not just the war, but we were also coming off of the aftermath of the Great Depression. And I tell people that that's the thing we have to be very careful about at this particular juncture. I made a comment some time ago that Mitch used in a negative way as he was making his speech on the floor. He said that I was this opportunity as a chance for us to reshape or restructure things. What I was talking about, and I still stand by that, is that when we came out of the Great Depression, everybody gives Franklin Roosevelt a tremendous amount of credit to overcome the Great Depression. And that's true, except that everybody did not recover. I represent communities right now that are still suffering from the aftermath of the Great Depression. When those programs came south, the Civilian Conservation Corps, the Work Project Administration, these were programs designed to infuse the economy, put people back to work, doing public works projects. But it happens that in the South, those programs had a little tag hung on them, white only. So a lot of places in the North, and even in the parts of the Midwest, they were stood back up. But in African-American communities throughout the South, because Franklin Roosevelt allowed Strom Thurmond and others to impose their structure of white-only structure on these black communities, they did not get the benefits of the recovery from the Great Depression. And so what I was talking about is the same thing I talked about when I sat down with Barack Obama and the House and Senate leaders. Mitch McConnell was in the room when I made the statement back in 2008, November 2008, right after Barack Obama had been elected president. He had gone out to Hawaii for his rest and relaxation period and had come back to Washington, met with the House and Senate leadership. And I happened to have just been elected 2 years earlier, House Majority Whip the first time. I told them in the meeting that I did not count among my favorite presidents Franklin Roosevelt, like most Democrats do. I told them that my favorite president just happened to have been Harry Truman at the time. And I said to Barack Obama, who at that time was president-elect, I said, now, Mr. President-elect, you can do something about that going forward. But as of right now, my favorite president is probably Harry Truman because of his fair deal rather than the New Deal. The New Deal of Franklin Roosevelt, I said to them, was a raw deal for a lot of the communities that I represent. And you go down to these rural communities in South Carolina right now, these low-income rural black communities are suffering. And they are suffering simply because of the structure that was put in place after the Great Depression that we're still suffering from now. And so what I was saying in that conference call, we can restructure things to fit our vision of making America's greatness accessible and affordable for all Americans. Now, I just saw a TV program this morning talking about what this opportunity will be for us to restructure things so that rural hospitals can stay open and not be closing like they are closing now.
Right.
There are dozens of rural hospitals all over the country that are closing. I want to see rural hospitals stay open.
Sure.
Four rural hospitals in my congressional district have closed in the last 5 or 6 years. I want to see these rural hospitals stay open because people in rural communities need these hospitals. I want to see community health care centers fully fund us to have 100% coverage of community health care centers. I want to see broadband fully fund so that we can have 100% coverage of broadband. Now, because of this coronavirus, my grandchildren are getting their education via the Internet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What about those children that are not connected to the Internet in these rural communities? They are going to be left behind for a whole year. I want to see stuff restructured so that my vision of making education accessible and affordable for all realized. I want to see health care accessible and affordable for all. So Mitch McConnell, misusing my vision to assign his vision to it. Just look at Kentucky. And not just rural black people. In Kentucky, one congressional district in Kentucky, represented by my good friend, Congressman Rogers, and he is a good friend, he has 24 counties. In his district, 22 of them are classified as persistent poverty counties. And those are not black communities. Those are white communities. So when I say restructuring our system so that everybody can benefit, it's not just for black people. It's for rural white people as well. You go up to out to Alaska, you're talking about Native Americans. You go out to New Mexico, you're talking about basically Latinos and Native Americans. You go out to Arizona, it's Native Americans. You don't get to black people until you come to South Carolina, Mississippi, Alabama, North Carolina. So this is not just about black people. This is about low-income communities. This is about rural communities that have been left out of this process. So I want to say to Senator McConnell, that's what I was talking about. And I would hope that Amon McGrath, who's out there running against him now, will pick up on this and make him answer to those rural people in Kentucky why he keeps leaving them out of these recovery packages that he's putting together for high-income Wall Street corporate people and not taking care of those low-income communities in Kentucky.
So in terms of, and I thank you for that explanation, because let me say this first of all, they were accusing you of politicizing the crisis, misinterpreting what you said, when you've clearly explained it and it makes perfect sense. It's not, and it's for everyone to be sure that everyone is helped. And more on that in a minute. But it seems to me they were the ones, you weren't doing anything exploitative. They were the ones exploiting your statement out of context. I mean, that's what it clearly looks like.
That's exactly what they were doing. And it's so interesting because I'm watching this TV this morning and they used the term. It's time for us to restructure our healthcare delivery system.
Right.
That's all we're saying. The Affordable Care Act was an attempt to restructure the health system. And that's what we're trying to do with community health centers, restructure our health care delivery system. We know how expensive it is. We know it's not accessible or affordable by everybody. And it needs to be restructured. And any African-American or low-income white person that disagrees with that must not know what their real plight in life is. And so not going to ever back away from that. Well, because we all know that we have put in place a system that was structured and the foundation of which was slavery, Jim Crow laws, and uneven, what I would call, recovery programs coming out of these recessions. Every time we have a recession, we take care of the corporate community and leave others to fend for themselves. And that's what this is all about. We have a structure that was based upon free slave labor, unequal laws of Jim Crow, and we are saying that we ought to put back in place things as they were before the recession. No, we ought to take this as an opportunity to restructure things so we won't have low-income people suffering when you come out of a recession. I'm not going to back away from that. I just hope that my constituents, I know my constituents understand it.
Right.
But I hope they will not allow themselves to be taken in by Mitch McConnell. He's one of the best speech makers I know. He's a pretty slick dude. And a lot of people will believe that foolishness.
Well, and not only is he slick and spreading foolishness and falsehood, but so is the president, isn't he? Because you're talking about rural areas, many of which are white, many of which are closing hospitals because their governors won't expand Medicaid when hospitals are needed in this pandemic. Trump is trying to convince these very same people that the pandemic is only going to affect blue states. He's even been saying red states, we're going to open them back up. I mean, so he's misleading. You're literally talking about they must not know their plight. I would say they don't know it because Trump is lying to them about their plight.
That's exactly right. And a lot of them are drinking the Kool-Aid. He's still stirring it up. And many of them are drinking it. And when this thing is all over, all you got to do is look at what he said when he signed this law. He put in place a law that would say to them, we are going to stand businesses back up, but we are not going to allow your children and your friends to rip off $500 billion. We ain't talking about $500 million now. $500 billion to stand businesses back up. And Trump is saying, I'm going to ignore any attempt of oversight on your part. And that simply means, I plan, when I come out of this presidency, for my children and their children to be wealthy, more wealthy than they were when they went in, and I'm going to do it at your expense. And rather than getting programs down to Main Street so that you can get your restaurants back open, so you can get your self-help stores back open, I'm going to rip this money off for my children and grandchildren operating up here in New York for them to be wealthy and you to stay where you are. So I'm going to ignore any attempt to making sure that you get this money and my children don't get it. Mm-hmm. And we're buying that. And that's exactly what this guy just said when he signed the law. We put in there that there's going to be oversight, there's going to be an inspector general, and then none of this money can be used for your businesses. It is unconstitutional for anybody to be benefiting using the presidency to benefit themselves, and we are quietly allowing this man to do it simply because he's feeding us Jim Crow with a new flavor, and we are buying it.
So now, in the bill and what you all put in, does that come as close as possible to the equity that you are arguing for and that was missing after the Depression?
In many instances, it does. Not as much as I would like. I just sent a piece out to the Congressional Black Caucus, and I gladly share it with anybody. We're putting it on my web page. Anybody who is interested in it, I ask them to visit my web page, and you can pull it down. And it's a piece on exactly what I'm talking about now, and I attached to it an article in Essence Magazine that is being published this month on how this process that we just put in place, how it needs to be made to benefit rural communities, that whole piece. And it's got charts and everything to show exactly what is happening in the rural communities. And I would hope that your listeners will go to my website, pull it down, and it's entitled, This is Our Country Too.
No, that's very, very important. It goes without saying what Trump has done and not done in this crisis and how poor his response has been. Unfortunately, in this crisis, you know, we have to deal with a lot of things. There is a presidential election. You, Majority Whip, have played a significant role in that. What is going to happen? I mean, people are afraid. People may not be as focused on voting, not to mention the census, as they should be. What are your thoughts about that? Do you have concerns? Where are we on moving to mail-in ballots? I mean, speaking of exploitation, he could use this as an opportunity to continue to suppress the vote and steal the election.
Absolutely, absolutely. And what I think that we need to do, is look at what we just did with this bill. Now, one of the things we tried to do, we tried to get $2 billion in this legislation in order to have mail all the ballots for everybody going in order to finish these primaries and to effectuate the general election. The Republicans fought us on that. The Senate would not accept that. They came out with a program with $100 million. Well, we fought them on that. We finally come out of this with around $400 million, which is only about 20% of what we really need. So here is my suggestion, and I'm going to talk to the Congressional Black Caucus on a conference call tomorrow about this. I suggest that we put in law that anybody over 55 years of age will get a mail or a ballot. If we don't do it for everybody, we ought to do it by the most high-risk people. We say that if you're over 55 years or whatever the age is, that make you most accessible to this virus, then let's say that anybody whose birthday has come on, whatever it is, to make you 55 years old, will receive in the mail a mail all ballot, so you don't have to go out there standing in line. And you'd say if you're under 55, then you have to have one of these other reasons for absentee. But if you're over 55, you ought to get your ballot in the mail and vote and have a date certain by which you ought to submit this so it can be counted on election day. And we can say that the ballot must be postmarked at least 7 days prior to election day, and you can put the date on it and just say that everybody, every voter in the country that is over 55 years old ought to get a ballot in the mail.
That would be a piece of legislation, correct? That's what you're proposing?
That would be a piece of legislation,
yeah.
That we put that in this next. We could do another stimulus bill.
Yeah, we're going to need one, aren't we?
We need that recovery bill. So we ought to have it so that whatever that Saturday or Friday is before the 3rd, that you have to have it postmarked by that day, so that you can count these ballots starting on the 2nd of November, which would be that Monday.
Gotcha, gotcha. So in such a piece of legislation, is there a reason we couldn't just include everyone, even those under the age of 55?
Yes, we could. That costs about $2 billion, but I'm saying, okay, if you put the money in there to do it, fine. But I think you can do what I just said using the $400 million that's already been appropriated. In this bill is $400 million for this purpose. So if we can't get the rest of the money, I'm saying you ought to use this $400 million to do what I just said.
Yeah,
if
you
can get the rest of it, up to $2 billion, then we ought to do it for everybody.
Who controls that money?
The House and the Senate. Got the bill that we just passed. It's got it in it. So we had $2 billion in the House bill. The Senate refused to accept the House bill. So they put in $400 million. And so we then agreed to the $400 million.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying is you need another $1.6 billion in order to do what I just suggested, mm-hmm, for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So when we come back and do this new bill, which a lot of people think will be around July 1, let's put the rest of the money in there so that everybody will have the ability to mail in, whatever the stipulations are, put it on there so they can come in prior to the election day. Because I don't think, now some jurisdictions, and I think this is really unfair to the American people, to say that if your ballot is postmarked by election day, it must be counted. I think that's unfair to the American people because you know what happens. 2 weeks after election day, you're still hanging in the balance. People still counting the mail-in ballots. I think the mail-in ballots ought to be postmarked prior to election day, giving the mayor 3 or 4 days in order to get there, so that you can start counting mail-in ballots, hopefully the day before election day, that Monday, and hopefully get the rest of them counted by the close of business on Tuesday.
Are you concerned about apathy when it comes to voting in the midst of this crisis?
I'm not concerned about apathy this time. I'm more concerned about complacency. I don't think apathy is there. I think people are tuned in. I'm concerned about complacency that can come out of feeling of voter suppression and of people just absolutely losing faith in the system. So that is what I'm concerned about.
Right.
Apathy means you don't care. Complacency means, yeah, it doesn't matter. I want people to feel that this election matters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what bothers me. We're going to have an election, but what I do won't matter. No, I want everybody to feel that what you do will matter. Don't be complacent about this election. Let's do what's necessary. Because if we don't go out and vote, if we do not change the trajectory that this country is on, that moral arc of the moral universe will not bend toward justice. It will bend significantly toward injustice.
Yeah, yeah. Lastly, Majority Whip, it has been reported, rumored, that you are the person who will pretty much be one of the most significant influencers on whomever Joe Biden picks as his running mate. Is that true? Have you advised him? Have you, in fact, said to him whom he should pick if you feel the liberty to disclose?
No, I have not had that conversation with Vice President Biden. I will not have that kind of a conversation with the Vice President. I've said to all of his friends and supporters who have asked. I will not play any role in who he picks as a running mate. I do not want to be on the committee. I don't want to be anywhere near the room where that decision is being made. I think that everybody should take into account what the Democratic Party is and who we are as Democrats, what this country is and what we should reflect as Americans. And let's put that into play when we're making these decisions. I don't think anybody needs any tutorial from me as to the history of this country, as to who and what have been the backbones of our party, and let's reflect that in our decisions going forward. Not just in who the vice presidential pick might be, but let's do the same thing when we start talking about standing up a cabinet if he is successful, and about picking justices to the Supreme Court and judges for the federal court. I'm finding it kind of amusing to me how Trump can run for president of the United States, collect a list and publish the list of people that he will select judges from before the election day. And then we come along saying we ought not be having that kind of discussion. We better have that kind of discussion, because this Supreme Court is going to be back to what it was in the 1860s. These judges are going to be back to what it was in the 1830s if we do not get a president in office and a system that will allow judges and jurists, is what we call, and justices, is what we call the Supreme Court. Folks, we don't call them judges, we call them justices.
Right.
So the justices, because I find it interesting, and I don't mind telling people, we got three women on the Supreme Court, and they're fine women. Mm-hmm. I like them all.
Mm-hmm.
Not a single one of them is black. And
yeah.
I think that is something they want to do about, and I'm open about that. I'm not saying who, but I am saying what.
Yeah.
And that is where I stand.
Well, I think he heard, I mean, he said that, and you're right, if you go by the history, and you're one of our preeminent history teachers, if you go by the history and you take a quiz, then you know, you kind of know, have to know who you have to pick and who is underrepresented.
Absolutely.
And so while you have not maybe said it explicitly, I think implicitly people have gotten the impression from your history class that he ought to pick a black woman.
Well, you know, I've said this publicly. I think it ought to be a woman. I personally, being the father of three black women, I prefer a black woman. But that is my preference. That doesn't mean it has to be that. But to me, it has to be a woman. There are a lot of qualified white women who I like and respect. And I think they're equally qualified black women who I like and respect. So it has to be a woman. I prefer a black woman.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. As always, in your service to us, you always give us a history lesson. And what a powerful one in terms of what happened during the Depression, and learning from those lessons. They ought to have a class that Mitch McConnell and others are required to attend in every year in terms of orientation, because what you said is not partisan. And there are a lot of people who are being hurt by this who look like them, who look like who are Kentuckians, who are Trump supporters. And
That's exactly right. And,
you know, they have to be looked out for as well and not lied to. I don't know how you tell people, frankly, well, y'all just may need to die to help the economy. That's what they've been, the lieutenant governor of Texas said that.
That's exactly what he said.
So
that is about as close to playing God as anything that I've seen in our governmental process. And that's the kind of foolishness these people will say. Anything, as outlandish as that is, in order to keep you focused on something other than what they're really doing.
Yeah. the Majority Whip folks, James Clyburn. Thank you as always, sir.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, and we'll talk again.
Look forward to seeing you soon.
Yes, sir. Thank you for listening to Make It Plain and Get Woke. Remember to listen, like, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. Also, subscribe to Make It Plain and Get Woke Daily. Check out MakeItPlain.com to subscribe. If all minds are clear, it has been made plain.